you know, what I'm thinking about, and that this is, I'm taking this very seriously.
Thank you. We look forward to getting those questions, and we're happy to provide detailed written response.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. I really appreciate that. I so appreciate my colleagues digging into this and taking this very, very seriously. We're really on the threshold of so much change, and sometimes it's overwhelming. And I want to thank you, Jacob, for giving us a little bit of historical context on technological changes, how this is not the first time that the city has had to deal with these kinds of changes over time. But right now, you know, this feels like the AI of transportation. You know, we're dealing with that. It's just it's a brave new world out there, and I think it can be very, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, kind of disturbing, you know, that change that's coming. And I always, just my nature, I'm sort of resistant to change, and not really interested in this. We are the change they want to see. It's interesting. I was in Phoenix and San Francisco and saw these Waymos just flash by one after another, and I felt like I was in a science fiction movie. It was really too much. Well, thank you so much for today's presentation. It was very thorough, interesting, historical context. 2017, who knew? I wasn't paying any attention then. I'm a little rattled by the fast pace of technology, what's coming at us as reflected by Waymo and AI and so forth. But thank you for your good work. Really, really appreciate your presentation today.
That was Portland City Council Vice President Olivia Clark and the rest of the Transportation Committee hearing a presentation on proposed rule changes for autonomous vehicles, or AVs, in Portland. They also heard an update on proposed legislation on the state level to allow AVs to operate statewide. That was HB 4085. PBOT says their next step is to open up the possible rule change to public comment. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. We are unfortunately without my co-host again, Rachel. Hopefully we'll get her back soon. We're broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I'm a public school teacher and host every second Monday of the month. Typically, we interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we've got three guests. We have Laura Farrelly, Megan Brown, and Brandon Ferguson. Welcome to all of you.
Hi.
Thanks.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yeah, of course. So would each of you start by introducing yourself and what you do as an educator, and maybe also how long you've been doing that?
Sure. I'm Laura Farrelly, and I am an English language arts teacher at Springfield High School. and I've been at Springfield High School for 9 years, and I've been in education for about 23 years. I began teaching in 2003. So I've been in it for a while.
And I'm Megan Brown. I was a teacher, a sixth grade math and science teacher at Hamlin Middle School. I'd been there for 2 years, but I've been in education for 7. So I've also taught fourth grade in a little school, and then I taught sixth grade math on the coast.
I'm Brandon Ferguson. I've been teaching social studies for 11 years, 7 at Hamlin Middle School, 3.5 at Springfield High, and then back to Hamlin Middle School to finish out this year.
Gotcha. Okay, so moving around a little bit. I see. Talk about what inspired you to become educators. We always like to ask that question of our guests.
I had this amazing English professor my freshman year of college, and in my first essay, she wrote on the bottom, "I picked you as an English major." And at the time, I had really thought I wanted to be a journalist, actually, a broadcast journalist. But the classes just weren't hitting that itch I had. And I just hearkened back to, helping students while I was in high school with language arts work. And I'm a people person, and I really believe in public education and serving the community. And I thought it was a great fit.
How about you, Megan?
I also had a different route. Like, I wanted to be a psychologist, and I wanted to help specifically middle school and high school students who were struggling with suicide and depression. Because I had like some family history of that. But then once I was in college, I realized I didn't want to go to school for as long as you need to for like that kind of degree. And so I looked at what else I could do to help the younger generations, which is what kind of led me to teaching. And I had a lot of phenomenal teachers growing up that also mentioned to me that I would be great in that role. So I switched to education, and I found that it was a way better fit for me because I love inspiring the kids to figure out what they are most curious about in the world and like be able to pursue their own dreams. So
great. And you, Brandon?
Yeah. I started out going through like the youth pastor route. And as I had some processing of, deconstruction, I thought, I don't really want to do that anymore, but I still want to be able to help impart some kind of knowledge to kids and hopefully guide them in a way that helps them make a positive impact on the world. And this is where that led me.
Great. All right. And then can you just let our listeners know any sort of union hats that you wear, union positions that you hold?
Yeah, I am a building rep, and I am the membership co-chair of our local union, Springfield Education Association. And I have also been elected as a rep for the RA, the Representative Assembly. I'm a member of Oregon Educators United, and also the statewide organizing team as well.
Great. Megan, any involvement with your union?
No, I don't have any union positions, and this is actually the first district that I've joined the union.
Ah, okay.
New for me.
And Brandon, how about you?
Currently, I'm the community engagement chair. I was on the bargaining team, which just wrapped up not so long ago. And then I basically take on whatever open positions there are with whatever free time I have. I was also elected to become the president of the association next year.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. First of all, congratulations. And I guess I was a little curious, was it a contested race?
It was. First contested race in living memory of the association. Everyone I've talked to can't remember a contested race. Even people who put in their 30 years and retired 10 years ago, I talked to somebody and she said, no, I don't remember. It was a tough decision because, of course, when you're working with people in the union capacity, you really respect everybody you're working with and everyone's your friend and all that. I thought that, the skill set and the experience that would be best suited for this next phase that we're entering. So I jumped in the race, and there were two other people running, wonderful people that I'm still happy to call my friends.
Good. Okay. Yeah, contested races are, of course, important, but there can be friction, and yeah, we don't want to be tearing down our union because of it. And maybe just talk briefly about why you decided to run or what you're hoping to accomplish. It's kind of the same question in two different forms.
Right. Well, the way I've thought about it is I want to act as kind of like a solid rock on both sides where to the best of my ability, of course, I'm gonna fail from time to time, but I want members to be able to put their concerns on my shoulders, and I want the any bad actors in district administration to know that I will be there standing in the way if they're trying to push our members around. And that I won't let anything slide past me.
Gotcha. Okay. And hopefully you are continuing to build a team of folks who can carry that weight on their shoulders as well, because we don't want you carrying it all yourself.
I think we'll talk about that later. We got some really amazing people stepping up.
Yeah, great. So another thing I wanted to touch on is that you did recently... I guess I hadn't gotten confirmation. I know you had been in bargaining and had, I think, gone to mediation, but have you settled your contract?
We have. I'll just keep going here. We had our ratification meeting on Wednesday, and it was approved. 92% voted yes. It's a pretty great contract. It took a long time, and it was full of consternation. So it was it wasn't like a celebratory moment when we finished, because of all the other stuff going on in the district. But when we look back on the things that we won, specifically language around elementary prep time, language around the process for dealing with students that need more behavior supports, and a whole bunch of other like little things that have been causing problems in the district, we got a lot, and we didn't take any losses. There were a whole bunch of weird things that the district threw at us it's like they didn't actually have ideas for how to improve the contract, so they just wanted to throw things at us that they knew we weren't going to accept, so that they could use them as bargaining chips. But we didn't have to take any of them. So I think it was a major win.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that that fight, or some of the tactics that you used or your strategy? It sounds like it was pretty successful in the end, from what you've said, but can you just get a little more into the details of some of the things that you did to get those wins?
Yeah, this was the first time we'd done a public bargaining in decades. Our previous bargaining strategy was collective, what do we call it? Collaborative interest-based bargaining. I think that 20 years ago, or however long ago, before my time, we had a pretty collaborative administration. And in theory, you know, in the education union space, like, we are supposed to be on the same team as the administration. You know, it's not like if you're working at a factory, you're really like at odds with the owners. In theory, teachers and administration are supposed to be heading the same direction. We just have different ideas of how to get there. That relationship had really started to go downhill for a while, but most notably the last 5 to 6 years. And our previous bargaining chair actually stepped down because she said, I only want to do collaborative bargaining. That's just the style she was comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And this district is no longer being collaborative. So yep. She stepped down. We got a new bargaining chair. We went to traditional bargaining. And it was a huge learning curve for our district, for our members specifically, who were saying, like, why are we all of a sudden butting heads with the district? And we had to tell them, you weren't at the table behind closed doors these last couple of times that we've been bargaining. This isn't new. This is what they've been like behind closed doors. And so it was a steep learning curve for people who wanted to basically step in volunteer roles where they felt like they were doing something productive. And they were. I don't mean to say like they were just feeling that way. It was really important. But a lot of times, you're just paying your dues to the union, and you are not really paying attention to what's going on. You're doing your own thing. But this was an opportunity for people to get involved and say, wait, this isn't just like I'm, you know, $100 goes out of my check every month. And every few years, they like there's a team that goes and bargains a contract. This was, we are all in this together. We all have each other's back, and we're all working to get the best working situation so we can help our kids. And that was super powerful. It comes with a lot of messiness, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think we, over the last year or so, we've become so much of a stronger union than we had been.
Great. Okay. Well, the other reason that I was wanting to have you come on the show today is my understanding is that your district recently laid off a number of educators. The last number I had heard was 27, but I don't know if that has shifted some. But in the middle of the year, right? So pretty rough to be laid off in the middle of a school year. Can you talk about that? Maybe start by talking about what was their justification for that? Why did they claim that they needed to do that in the middle of the year?
Laura, go ahead.
Okay. It was shocking to say the least. We received an email from our superintendent on January 8th, and with this declaration that they were going to present a resolution to our school board on Monday, the following Monday, so 4 days later on January 12th, to approve this. And basically, they tried to blame the union. They did. They blamed the union for wanting it, and we hadn't even finished bargaining yet. This is the kicker. They said in order to since the union wanted the COLA increase, as we so much deserve, the bare minimum, they said in order to do that, they would just have to lay off people in the middle of the year. When it was brought up to them, it was probably the biggest amount of people at a board meeting I've ever seen in Springfield. People watching online, I think I think like 200 people at the office. People speaking about why aren't you cutting in a democratic fashion, starting, of course, from the top, six-figure type jobs. But no, they decided to just cut 27 teachers' positions from middle high school and two from the district office. But however, there's actually 36 positions. The remaining positions just were not filled. So yeah, just truly, it's been a nightmare. Shocking to say the least. I don't know if anyone else wants to take on from here then.
I wanted to ask a follow-up though, Laura. The way that you talked about it, I don't know if it was intentional, but you said they blamed the union. So were they third partying you? Is that part of their tactic, which is to say, you know, they're not blaming teachers. We love our teachers, but the union.
Correct. That's correct, because we were in bargaining. However, what's really interesting is that we have a timeline. Our fabulous bargaining team, which Brandon was a part of, and our bargaining chair, they went back through budget meetings, through the beginning of bargaining, and in March of 2025, you know, the district said they wanted, and I actually have it pulled up on my screen here. Hold on. They actually declared that they wanted bargaining. The district stated that bargaining and the budget process were separate. No assumptions were made for COLA, insurance, or related items. They explicitly said the two processes would remain independent. So again, rather shocking that they blamed bargaining for these mid-year cuts. We can't take it anything but personally. It feels like such disrespect and quite beyond insulting, harmful to our school communities, our students, clearly our staff, our colleagues.
All right. Brandon, were you going to add something or?
Well, I'll just, the one thing, they couldn't even be bothered to other the union. They were blaming the union, but it's not like they said, we love our teachers. Like, nothing like that even came out of their mouth. That wasn't even, that's not even in the realm of their concerns.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Well, Megan, question for you now. So I understand that you were one of the educators who were laid off. Sounds like your situation maybe has changed some, but can you share your story? Maybe start with how you first got the news.
And my situation, I think, is a little bit of a special one for all the people who, compared to everyone else who got laid off. Not that it's like any worse or anything. I mean, this is hard on like all 27 of us. But when I found out, I was 8 months pregnant. We found out on January 20th at the end of the school day, who was getting laid off at our school. And Hamlin, unfortunately, got hit really hard. We lost 8 teachers, 2 in 6th grade, 2 in 7th grade, and then 4 in 8th grade. And I just can't imagine like what those, you know, children are now going through that they've lost those teachers. But my principal came and informed me at the end of the day. I was actually the first one that she told. She's fantastic. She hated having to tell me especially because of my situation. And my first question to her was, do I get to keep my maternity leave? And nobody had an answer. So it was really hard to find out on the 20th that my last day with my kids would be the 28th. And my last day of work would be the 30th. And so, my second question was then I was worried about my kids because, I knew that no matter what, like me and my husband and the baby, we'd be fine. We'd make it through. But like these kids that I've, developed such a connection with, they might not have anyone else. Hamlin is has kind of that reputation for being a little bit of a tougher school, and some of those kids only connect with one teacher, maybe two. So we were able to tell our kids on that Thursday, so 2 days later, and I actually had a student who went home because she was physically ill when she found out that I was one of the ones getting cut. I had another student who didn't even want to go to any of his classes for the next 2 days. Another one that's been like struggling ever since. So I then went on a long email thread with HR trying to figure out, you know, what I get to keep and how this affects me, mainly because of the baby. I am the like primary financial person in our household. My husband does work for the district, but as an aide, he also works at Hamlin. And so thankfully we were able to keep insurance because I could transfer it onto him. And HR was able to find a way for me to keep my maternity leave by rehiring me as classified staff as an aide. But if I wouldn't have taken that, I would have lost my maternity leave. And unemployment wasn't really an option for me because I can't search for work being, you know, eight and a half months pregnant. And you don't qualify for unemployment unless you are able to look for work. So I was kind of in this weird situation. So I'm grateful that HR found that for me, but now I'm in a process to be able to get my maternity leave based on my teacher salary and not my aide salary.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's definitely been an emotional and stressful like roller coaster with trying to navigate all of this, but also try to keep my stress level down for the baby, who will be here this week. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. And of course, the other side of the equation, Megan, and I'm sorry that must have been horribly stressful, but the other side of this is the impact that it has on everybody who remains, right? Because you talked about the impact on the students, but there's also the impact on everyone else who works there, right? Because it's not like, okay, all the students that those teachers were working with, you know, they just won't have a teacher for the rest of the year. No, they, right? That doesn't happen, right? So whenever there are layoffs, it's not like, okay, there's going to be, we're no longer going to do this or that or the other thing, right? You're still expected to do all the things. So those of you that are left, Brandon and Laura, are expected to just pick up the slack and do more, right? So in the remaining few minutes that we have, can you talk about what you all are doing now in response to these cuts?
I'll go from that great segue. I was, until last week, teaching mostly junior level classes at the high school, government mostly. I am now back to my roots at Hamlin Middle School, a place that is very special to me. It has a place in my heart. But as Megan said, it's not the easiest school to work in. It's one of, in our general area, Eugene Springfield, it's one of the lowest SES schools. It's a lot of kids from really rough homes are coming to this school. And middle schoolers already need that kind of support from these trusted adults, that kind of stability, and especially these kids in particular. You told us to use proper language on the show, so I'll be careful. But the fact that Hamlin lost 8 teachers out of the 18 core teachers, that's almost half. Mm-hmm. And these kids are the ones that needed that stability the most. Mm-hmm. And I'm very upset. And so now I'm at Hamlin trying to survive for the rest of the year with these kids who are just in a state of chaos. And, you know, to their, you know, control of their behavior was not 100% before this, and it's rough. I think we're all doing the best we can. These kids, I mean, they can be resilient, and so we're making it work, but it's really hard.
Do you think that it was a calculated decision to target Hamblin because of the families that it serves? You know, do they think that there was some thinking, oh, these parents won't fight back as much as parents in another school?
Well, there's a lot going on at Hamblin, and for a bunch of different reasons, a lot of the staff was really new. So contractually, that's how it was going to fall.
Yeah.
There are always things that people can do to mitigate the impact certain places. And that's not ever something that our district has put at the front and center for when it comes to Hamblin. They don't treat it with the kind of support that I think that they should. But that's a long-term thing.
Right. Well, we only have another minute or two. Anything else that you are planning to do, or maybe there are some things that you're planning to do that you need to keep confidential for now, but what are you thinking for the rest of the year?
The whole city is pretty mad at our administration, and I think, like, from top to bottom, from the mayor to the people on the street, they hear this and they're saying, what the hell's going on down there? And so I'll just, you know, keep it simple and say, we're hoping to go a new direction next year.
There you have it, listeners, a new direction next year. Okay. Well, thank you so much, all three of you, for joining us on KBOO. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Stephen Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.